Good evening, everyone, and welcome to tonight's telephone town hall. I'm Joe Duffel, president of UFCW Local 1167, and I'm pleased to be joined tonight with Tomar from Kaiser Permanente, along with Dr. Kimberly Petrick from Kaiser Permanente. Tonight, we're going to be presenting some important information about COVID-19 and answering some of the most frequently asked questions that members have. Again, I'm Joe Duffel, president of UFCW Local 1167. I'll be hosting tonight's telephone town hall with Tomar Schnipp and Dr. Kimberly Petrick from Kaiser Permanente. Right now, we're dialing out thousands of our members to get on this call to receive the important information. We're going to get started in one moment. Good evening, and welcome to tonight's telephone town hall. I'm President Joe Duffel, UFCW Local 1167, and I'm pleased to be on the call tonight with Tomar and Dr. Kimberly Petrick from Kaiser Permanente. Tonight, we're going to be discussing and presenting some important information about COVID-19 and answering some most frequently asked questions that our members have. Again, I'm Joe Duffel, president of UFCW 1167, and we will be hosting tonight's telephone town hall with Kaiser. So thank you very much. I want to thank everyone for joining the call tonight. We hope that you're able to get some valuable information and speak directly to a doctor. We do have some questions, as I stated, that we'll try to go through. We're going to try to make this call informative and as quick, because we do value your time as possible. So with that, I will go ahead and turn it over to Tamar from Kaiser. Tamar, thank you.
Well, hello. Thank you so much, Joe. It's wonderful to be here. I want to welcome everybody to this special call hosted by Local 1167 together with Kaiser Permanente. We're so happy to be here and able to talk to you and bring you some important information. We're so grateful, and we want to thank you for all the work you've been doing in your communities during this whole time of COVID. You've been essential workers in the front line out there serving our communities with, you know, important food and essentials that are keeping everybody healthy. So we want to take a chance to try and help you be as healthy as you possibly can be as well. So I think with that, what I'd like to do is turn it over to Dr. Petrick. And Dr. Petrick, from Kaiser Permanente, is going to give you some baseline, important, up-to-the-minute information about what we know about COVID and how to keep yourself and your family safe. And then after that, I'll hand it back to Joe. And Joe is going to ask the doctor some questions that come from you, the membership. So, Joe, do you think we're ready? I see that some people are still joining.
Let's turn it over to the doctor. Let's proceed.
Okay, great. Dr. Petrick, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Tamar and Joe. Hello, everyone. I wanted to thank you all as well for being the incredible and brave frontline workers that you all are. As Tamar mentioned, my name is Dr. Kimberly Petrick. I am a family physician practicing with Kaiser Permanente in Santa Monica for the last 5 years. But enough about me. Let's talk about you, your important questions, and this crazy world we've been living in for the last few months. Do you remember late 2019, even early 2020? It seems so long ago, doesn't it? When the biggest medical concern was fighting the common cold, flu, or our own personal medical problems, who could have imagined that this bug, this virus transmitted in droplets by people coughing, sneezing, even talking or laughing, could alter everyone's life in a matter of a few short months? Yet, here we are. So we've all heard over and over again how to prevent or slow the spread of this virus: physical distancing, maintaining 6 feet between you and the person near you, washing your hands often, don't touch your face, wear your mask, cover your cough, don't go to work if you're sick. We're so demanding, aren't we? But yet, it's so necessary, because not only do people who have symptoms transmit this potentially deadly virus, but people can also be contagious for up to 48 hours before they even know that they have the virus. There have been a few trials of medical treatments, Some that have showed really bad side effects and were taken off of the potential treatment list, and some with promise, but really only for really, really sick people. Though still none that can help us folks who are out here and not hospitalized. So this means that the only solution right now is you. So here we are, standing together, seeking answers, testing, and cures. So there has been a ton of information out there, some that is so confusing, so many mixed messages on television and social media, it's hard to know what to believe, right? The anxiety, the depression, the lack of control, most of us have experienced some degree of emotional stress during the last 4 months related to COVID, and I know I have. But I am here to tell you that you are not alone. Your friends, coworkers, family, even your doctors, we are all in this together. From social distancing, which I prefer to refer to as physical distancing, because now more than ever we need to be socially connected, even if it is from a distance, to testing and antibodies, we have come a long way since the early COVID days, but still not yet far enough. Every day we learn more about this virus, prevention, and treatments, and I am excited to be here with you today to share this knowledge. I hope that you leave here after this call with a bit more clarity and resolve. But remember, information about COVID changes from day to day, sometimes even hour to hour. So let's see if we can get you some current answers in this ever-changing COVID world.
Very good. Thank you so much, doctor, for that introduction. So we'll go to the first question. The first question is around stress. Debbie from Bonds writes, I'm so stressed from trying to understand what is going on and worrying about my family. Are there mental health resources for me and my family to cope with stress? Doctor?
Thanks, Joe. And Debbie, thank you so much for sharing your feelings. I am so sorry about how this is impacting you. But again, I want you to know that you are not alone. Fear and anxiety about any disease, especially COVID nowadays, can be overwhelming and lead to strong emotions, kind of as I mentioned earlier. Some of these feelings may be feelings we've never even experienced before. So discovering your best way to cope with stress can make you, the people you care about, and your community stronger. Everyone thrives differently. So know that we at Kaiser Permanente are here for you if you're a Kaiser Permanente member, but there are also a lot of community resources out there as well. So some of the best first steps for stress management for anybody, COVID or otherwise, that I recommend as a primary care doctor are exercising, eating and sleeping well, trying breathing or meditation exercises, if that's your kind of thing. Connect with friends and family. Talk about your stress. Support others and share positive stories. That's really important. Try to remember the positive that's happening around you. On Kaiser Permanente's website, kp.org, you will find resources to support you and your family's mental health. You can go on to kp.org/coronavirus and go to the emotional wellness support section for a vast amount of resources. Also, if meditation and mindfulness are your things, we have new apps at no cost for our members through kp.org. And these two apps are Calm and My Strength, really awesome resources. And of course, if you feel like talking to a counselor, KP has a great team of mental health professionals on a self-referral basis, meaning you don't need your doctor to send a referral for you. And you can call your local appointment center and get an appointment virtually, via phone, or video for whatever works best for you if you do want one-on-one counseling as well.
Outstanding. Thank you, doctor. The second question is from Maria at Food for Less. I am not high risk, but I live with my mom and dad. What precautions can I take to prevent bringing home COVID-19 or infecting them?
Yeah. Hi, Maria. Thank you for your question. And that is a great question. Because you provide such an important service and are needed at work, it is especially important that you take care of yourself and your environment. There is no way for any of us to control whether or not we will be exposed to the virus at work or in public in general. But certainly, you can take control of what you can control, like the physical distancing, the hand hygiene, and the masking, for example. If you are able to work from home, great. But many of us, including myself, cannot. And so those fundamental steps are really important. In your industry, masking is especially important. This helps protect you from the patrons, as well as your coworkers, if you're engaging in common areas, and for your family from bringing it home. Some people will change their clothes when they get home. I say, yeah, for sure. Get comfortable. Makes for a good reason for you to get into your sweats early. So feel free to change your clothes when you do get home if that does make you feel more protected. You can wash your clothes with non-work clothes as well. But make sure that you're washing them on the warmest setting that is allowed per the label of the manufacturer. And also, if you're concerned for exposure on your clothes, especially if you've come in contact with somebody who is sick, use disposable gloves when you're handling the dirty laundry, and then wash your hands after. Do not shake out the dirty laundry. Also, this is a great opportunity to quickly again revisit the fundamental precautions that all of us should be taking, whether we're at work or out in public. First, avoid close contact with people who are sick. Maintain that 6-foot distance we are always talking about. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds, and you're okay using alcohol sanitizers. Those are also effective, especially if it's over 60%. Try not to touch your eyes, nose, or mouth with unwashed hands. Follow the stay-at-home orders when you're able to. Don't leave the house unless you have medical care or essential activities that are a must. Cough or sneeze into a tissue or your elbow, but still wash your hands after you do that. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects and surfaces frequently. Get plenty of rest, drink plenty of fluid, eat healthy foods, manage your stress, because I promise you all of those actions will also help build and maintain your immune system. And if you are sick, stay home. I can't emphasize that enough. That is the most important thing that I can emphasize for you. Again, if you are sick, stay home. Everything is COVID nowadays until proven otherwise. And lastly, if you or your family develops any symptoms, please call your doctor so that we can guide you as to what the next best steps are for you as an individual.
Okay. Thank you very much. So we'll go to question number 3. It's around pregnancy. Nancy from Albertson's question is, someone in my family is pregnant. Do pregnant women have a higher risk of getting COVID-19 or developing serious complications due to this infection?
Yeah. Hi, Nancy. First off, congrats on the pregnancy and the almost new addition in your family. Very exciting. So that's also a great question. Based on what we know from COVID-19 and per the CDC, we believe pregnant people appear to have the same risk as non-pregnant adults. However, much still remains unknown. We do know that pregnant people have a higher risk of more severe reactions to certain illnesses, like the flu or influenza, and we know that pregnant people also have changes in their bodies that may increase their risk of some infections. Therefore, if you or someone close to you is pregnant, it's best to always be on the more cautious side and try to protect yourself from illnesses whenever possible. At Kaiser Permanente, we test all patients who come in labor. If a pregnant patient is not in labor but does have symptoms in any trimester, we advise COVID testing, and if positive, they are triaged and put on a 14-day home quarantine or admitted to the hospital depending upon the severity of the symptoms. But if there is pregnancy, not necessarily increased risk, but increased potential for adverse reaction and more severe disease. So take caution, Joe.
Thank you so much. So, Doctor, the next question is from Doug. He works at Rite Aid, and it's about antibodies testing. What is the biggest misconception of COVID-19 regarding antibodies and antibody testing?
Oh, Doug. Okay. Antibody testing is the most popular question I get, both in my personal and professional life. So let's take a moment to lay it all out. Antibody tests are great for epidemiological studies, that is. They are really great to help us know how many people in the population may have been exposed, but they are not reliable for telling us what we really want them to and what we really want to know. These tests still have not proven what they really mean or do for any of us. Yes, they let us know if we have been exposed or infected, but we still do not know what they mean. And if they mean that we are immune, how long will we be immune? So let's just say we have a positive antibody test. Does that mean we're going to be immune for 1 year, 10 years, or could we get infected again next year? We really don't know. So unfortunately, antibodies do not necessarily signify immunity right now. Let's take, for example, HIV or even herpes, HSV. We definitely make antibodies and lots of them to those viruses, but they don't necessarily protect us and prevent the disease from occurring in our body. Also, another major setback about antibody testing is that if you get the antibody test too soon, it may actually give you a false negative. For example, if you take the blood test before 7 to 14 days, your body is still trying to build an immune response. And so if you get tested too early, the body may not actually have those antibodies and we may miss it. Moral is, you don't put too much hopes right now on these tests because the real answers can only be discovered with time. And hopefully in 2021, we will have a vaccine that will start giving us the herd immunity that we've all been waiting for, so we can really go to that quote-unquote immunity that we're really hoping for.
Excellent. Thank you, Doctor. The next question is around children in school. I have a small child that will be returning to school in the fall. Is there any concern that I should be aware of?
So this is a really complex question, Joe. The most important thing to understand is that kids seem to be very low risk for COVID. They get it less, and when they do, their infections tend to be much less severe than adults in general. There has been a lot of scare recently in the news, if you have seen it, about kids and this inflammatory reaction, but that's still a minority of kids. And I mean, like, minority is 1 in 10,000 infections. So the danger of school is not so much for the kids per se, but who they will spread it to when they come back home. Right now, there is really minimal data that kids even spread the disease to each other or to adults. Almost all infections in kids have been studied seem to come from the adults, not the other way around. Maybe it's because they're less symptomatic, but nobody really knows for sure. There's no reason to think that they can't spread the disease, since they tend to be the ones who spread everything else, the little petri dishes at times, but there's just no evidence that they do spread it to adults yet. So I would recommend approaching kids in school the same way that we do for adults and work. The most important rule, again, is don't let your child go to school if they are sick. If everybody's parents do that, we can try to decrease the transmission. Also, consider implementing some sort of temperature or symptom check before they come home or when they come home from school. If a kid does test positive for COVID, put them in isolation for 10 days, and the school should hopefully also be implementing social distancing, meaning they put the desks 6 feet apart or possibly barriers between the desks. It is very likely that they may need to wear face masks when social distancing is not possible, but that's something that the teacher will have to reinforce. And I don't know if you guys are aware, but there's also a lot of talk about staggering shifts where some kids will come to school on some days and others on others' days, which might suck for you as a parent because you're still going to have to worry about home care the other half of the days, but it definitely will decrease the risk of exposure in classes because of decreased class size. And some districts will also continue with virtual distance learning as well. So it will be a learning curve for all of us, but what I can say is for kids, there's no known true risk at this time. Just make sure that you are screening them the same way you would screen an adult and make sure that they're not bringing home diseases the same way we were just talking about before.
Very good. Thank you, Doctor. The next question is around high risk. Member question was from Aaron that works at Albertsons. I have diabetes. Are people in this category at higher risk of getting COVID? I have heard so many things. Who is at higher risk to get COVID?
Yeah. Thanks, Aaron. So yes, you are absolutely correct that the CDC has reported that there are some people with chronic diseases who are at higher risk. These do include diseases such as diabetes, but also heart disease, respiratory illnesses, obesity, and immunocompromised folks, just to name a few of them. Also, it's not just disease-related. Being over the age of 65 is also considered a risk factor, especially if you're 65 with any of the above-mentioned chronic diseases. Now, with that said, most cases of COVID are still very mild to moderate, far less of the population than who will have the severe or critical illness. But if you do fall into one of these risk factor groups, it's important to be even more vigilant about maintaining your well-being during these COVID times.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Doctor. So the next question is around temperature checks, and the question comes from John from Stater Brothers. At my workplace, they're taking employees' temperatures. Does this really help protect me?
Yeah, and the answer is yes, absolutely. I strongly recommend temperature checks both at work, and if you're extra eager, you can actually monitor your own temperature at home as well. Here's the thing. Fever is a key symptom of COVID, so taking your temperature at work helps screen the healthy from the sick and may prevent people with mild or even early disease who may not even know that they have it from spreading it. You'll also see that they're starting to do temperature screenings at LAX as well, so you are not alone by doing it at work. At Kaiser Permanente and in my office as well, both the employees and every member gets their temperature checked, in addition to answering a brief set of questions to screen for possible exposure and risk. This is to protect not only our staff, but also the patients that will be visiting us. We want to make sure that we are all as protected as we can be. So I completely support the temperature checks. Yes.
Okay, very good. And just to clarify, John was with a provider, not Stater Brothers. The next question is from Kenny, and Kenny's with Stater Brothers. Can I be tested for coronavirus even if I don't feel sick? Does Kaiser Permanente have the ability to test for the virus?
Hi, Kimmy. Great name. That's my name, too. Yes, we can absolutely test you for the virus, but for now, Kaiser Permanente is still reserving testing for folks who have symptoms or are sick. If you do have symptoms, call your doctor so that we can discuss if testing is right for you. Now, just to clarify, the test that we're talking about right now is what we call the PCR test. This is the nasal swab or the sputum test that detects the presence of the active virus. This is different than the antibody test, which is a blood test that checks to see if you once upon a time had the virus in the past. You do not need this virus PCR testing if you do not have symptoms. Okay? Similar to what we have discussed earlier about the antibody test, we cannot test everyone every day for the virus. And just because you're negative today does not necessarily mean that you have not been exposed and that your test is simply not positive yet. So I really discourage testing if you're not symptomatic. However, if you still want to get testing despite all of this, you may go to your local county's website to access other non-Kaiser Permanente local community testing resources. If you do come into contact with somebody who does have symptoms, also a good idea to call your doctor so you guys can determine your risk and what the next best steps are specifically for you. The takeaway is really just to make an appointment with your doctor if you have any questions or you have the question about the test needing to be ordered and if you meet the criteria for testing.
Excellent, doctors. Thank you. So, as we move on, we're gonna do one more question, a couple more questions, correct? Or we're just gonna go to the polling questions.
Yeah. Well, hi everybody. This is Tamar again. I think what we want to do is ask you a couple of polling questions right now, and then we'll go back to more questions for the doctor. So, all of you, does that work all right, Joe?
That's yes, fine. Yeah. Outstanding.
Okay. So everybody, take out your phones. What we want to know so far, so to help your union make these calls better and better for you, if you could take out your phones and press 1 if this town hall has been helpful for you so far. Have you learned one thing? And press 2 for no, this isn't helpful. if you haven't learned anything. And we'll give you a couple minutes, not minutes, but a little bit of time to press one for yes, it's helpful, and two for no. Really appreciate that. And meanwhile, again, want to thank you all for being on this call, being interested in taking care of yourselves and your families and your coworkers. It's really important for us all to keep learning. Things keep changing. As Dr. Petrick said, information comes from so many directions. It's very confusing. So it's great to see all of you interested in learning here. And
Tamar, thank you. And so we've got so the first poll question, and it's roughly about 90-92% of you said that this is helpful, and thank you for that.
Yes, thank you for that information. We're going to go to the second poll. This is for us to learn, again, about you a little more and who's out there. This is totally confidential. We are just interested in learning about where you get your health care. So we are going to ask you again to press 1 if you are a Kaiser Permanente member, if you get your health care at Kaiser, and 2 if you do not. We're just trying to learn more about you so we can tailor our answers. So start now, 1, if you are a Kaiser Permanente member, and 2, if you are not. Okay, and it keeps coming in. And we know that there are many providers out there where you are, and we're just hoping that you're getting all the health care you need. That's the most important, wherever you get it. And as Dr. Petrick said, sometimes even the counties are providing us what we need to the whole community, which is wonderful. We're all partnering together. So
So we've got about 67% of the callers are Kaiser Permanente.
Yay! Welcome to the family, guys. I'm glad you're part of the family, I should say.
All right. Thank you very much, everyone, for that information. And then back to you, Joe, and Dr. Petrick. Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you so much, Tamara. And Doctor, the next question quickly is, there a coronavirus vaccine? And this question comes in from Araceli. And Araceli is actually a retiree.
Oh, hi, retirees. Well, thank you for tuning in. And the answer to that is unfortunately no, not yet. However, there are a few clinical trials, about 8 of them out there, of which Kaiser Permanente is a part of one up in Washington, and it is showing tremendous success with the Moderna vaccine, but it's still many months out from being a viable vaccine. If we're lucky, it may be available as early as 2021, but generally vaccines take at least 12 to 18 months to develop and make sure that it is safe to come out to people. So in the meantime, please continue with those good habits of the distancing, hand washing, and masking, and hopefully that vaccine will be here in no time.
Okay, so the next question comes in from Matthew. He didn't give a company, but the question is around COVID-positive coworkers. If someone has tested positive at my work site, how long should I be off of work, or how long should they be off of work before it's safe to go back? That's a good question.
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's even better because this information has changed with time. So I'm so glad that you asked that question because it does have a bit of a complicated answer. So the CDC made an important change a few weeks back about which employees are allowed to go back to work after a potential exposure instead of staying home on quarantine. These recommendations used to apply primarily to healthcare workers, since otherwise none of us doctors or people in the healthcare field would be around, but they recently changed the recommendations, expanding to include critical infrastructure workers, including food and agriculture workers such as yourselves. So it's actually no longer necessary to keep everyone home who has been in contact with a positive person out of work. Instead, if you've been exposed but are not symptomatic, you as the employee should take your temperature before coming to work, as we were talking about. A face mask should be worn at all times at work, and social distancing must be practiced. You, the employee, should not share headsets or anything else that goes near your face. your employer should also be taking your temperature to assess and assessing for symptoms before work hopefully starts, meaning we want you doing the questionnaire and checking that temperature before you come in to your workplace. And of course, if you do develop a fever or any symptoms at any point in the day, you need to go home immediately, especially first thing in the morning. If you haven't come in, don't walk into the building. In addition to all of that, the CDC also recommends increasing cleaning of frequently used surfaces, as well as increasing the air exchange whenever possible. So you don't, as a frontline worker, you do not need to stay home if you've been exposed. Just make sure that you are vigilant with your temperature checks. And we call a fever anything above 100.4. So 99 point something or even 100 is not necessarily considered a fever, but do check your temperature and monitor yourself for any kinds of signs of infection.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So we have another question from Juanita from Albertsons. It's about protecting themselves in small places. How can coworkers protect themselves? How can we protect ourselves when we are preparing food in small spaces with other people and handing food out to the general public?
Yeah. Hi, Juanita. So the best thing that you can do is to continue the same hygiene practices we discussed earlier. And I will reemphasize again, make sure that you are wearing your mask at all times. You don't necessarily need to wear gloves, but make sure that you are wearing the mask so that there's no contamination in small spaces where people breathe or can talk and those respiratory particles get airborne. That's the most important thing. And then also make sure without chemical exposure onto food, clean area frequently.
Very good. Thank you. So we'll go to the next question. Reusing masks and gloves. Alex from Vaughn's. How often should we reuse masks and gloves at work?
Oh, hi, Alex. So if you're using cloth masks, then they should be routinely washed after each daily use. Okay. If you're using a surgical or medical mask, dispose of it at the end of every day. There's a discrimination there, okay? Now, regarding gloves, disposable gloves should never be reused, but reusable gloves should be sanitized and cleaned regularly. If you're wearing a cloth mask, carefully remove that mask without touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. And then when you do remove that mask, make sure that you're washing your hands immediately after removing it. Remember, you're wearing a mask, and this mask is supposed to be protecting you from airborne respiratory transmission. So assume that that mask has been contaminated after a long day of its use, and don't get it on your hands. Make sure you're washing your hands. But otherwise, dispose of the medical masks and disposable gloves, and make sure that you're cleaning everything else routinely, including cloth masks, daily.
Okay, thank you, Doctor. The next question is from Carla at Stater Brothers. What are the symptoms of COVID-19, and do I need to show all the symptoms to be positive for COVID-19?
Hi, Carla. So that's a great question, and I will tell you it's not that easy of an answer, but the symptoms are ever-changing. So let me preface with that, okay? There's no way to really be certain if or if not you do have it. Some people will have absolutely no symptoms at all, and other people will have florid symptoms. So the CDC lists symptoms to include things like fever, chills, cough, difficulty breathing, also known as shortness of breath, fatigue, muscle and body aches, headaches, loss of taste and smell, sore throat, congestion, runny nose, nausea, dizziness, diarrhea, tummy pain. But a lot of those are very few on the percentage of people who get it. The most common and prevalent are the cough, fever, shortness of breath and chills, and fatigue and body aches. Again, if you feel sick, have a fever or a cough, make sure that you call your doctor as soon as possible so that you can discuss with them what the next best steps are for you. And for Kaiser Permanente, call our advice line or set an appointment, telephone or video, with your doctor so we can really help hold your hand through this process, because I know it can be very scary to have an infection that has had so much hype over the news. So no, you don't need to have all of them. You could have one or none or all of them and still be COVID positive.
Thank you, Doctor, and thank you all for your questions that you submitted tonight. I just wanted to let everyone know we here at Local 1167, we've done a lot of work collectively with our providers, our healthcare providers, specifically at Kaiser. We've also done a lot of things legislatively at the local and state levels to try to mitigate risk and protect our members. So I hope that you've all found this telephone town hall informative and interesting. I also want to remind everyone that if you have any additional questions after the call that we didn't answer today, you can stay on the line and you'll be able to record a question. That question will be forwarded directly to Kaiser, and we will make sure that you get an answer to that question hopefully within the next 24 hours. So please, if you have any questions and things that we didn't touch on here, COVID-related, of course, please stay on the line, and we will be absolutely happy to get back to you and answer your questions. Thank you all very much. Thank you, Kaiser, for co-hosting or agreeing to come and have this conversation, and I certainly hope everyone's a little better educated for it. Thank you all very much, and have a good evening.
Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.